Hello, Twins fans. This is John Spole with TwinsTrivia.com with another interview with a player from the Twins' wonderful past. Today we will be speaking with Michael Pomerantz, who many of you know today as a news anchor at KARE 11 in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. But before Mike was a news anchor, Mike was a minor league pitcher for the Minnesota Twins. So let's see what Mike has to say. Mike, where did you grow up and what sports did you play when you were growing up?
I grew up in Hollywood, Florida, and I was a bowler, of all things, when I was a little boy. You know, you end up doing, I think, a lot of the activities your friends do. And for some reason in my neighborhood, in South Florida, of all the sports to play, my group of friends were all into bowling. We were 7, 8 years old, and that's what they were doing, so that's what I ended up doing. And then about 9 years old, one of them made the switch to Little League. A couple had already been in T-ball, but I didn't play T-ball. And then 9 years old, I picked up baseball, played Little League for the first time, and maybe a little bit of rec soccer, not soccer, I'm sorry, rec basketball, and that was about it. Mom wouldn't let me play football, said it was too dangerous.
I can understand that. I've heard that before.
Meantime, playing baseball, I've broken every finger on both hands at one time or another. My nose a couple of times. I'm thinking, how much worse could football have been?
That's right. That's right. My research indicates that you played college baseball at Miami-Dade and also at Clemson University. Can you tell us a little about your collegiate career?
Sure. I went to Miami-Dade with the idea that perhaps I might get drafted because the rules at the time allowed for junior college students to be eligible for the draft after every season, as opposed to those who attended a four-year university weren't immediately eligible for the draft. They had to wait until after their junior year. Mm-hmm. So I went to junior college for that reason. Plus, you know what, to be honest with you, I don't think I was ready to go too far away from home. I think I needed that extra year around home, or my parents would probably argue. But I left high school. I was 17 years old, so I was a little bit young. I needed that year. By the second year of junior college, I was ready to go. And baseball-wise, I actually was injured my first year in junior college, so I ended up being one of those rare junior college red shirts. I played two seasons, or played one season after that in junior college and then went to Clemson. And I would say just an average career as far as productivity and statistics go. Nothing earth-shattering. I was in the rotation as a starting pitcher primarily for Clemson. Just a middle-of-the-pack guy. Nothing great.
Were you always a pitcher, or did you play some other position?
I played first base and outfield. Being left-handed kind of limits you on the baseball field beyond that in high school. And in the college, at the college level, pitched only.
Okay, okay. I think the Twins drafted you in the third round of the 1986 amateur regular draft, and then Houston drafted you in the ninth round of the secondary phase of the draft that year, but you didn't sign with either team. Why was that?
Well, I think I would have... Minnesota and I think at the time... after like a week before the next draft, you fall back into the pool. The team's allowed to negotiate with you up until that week before. Mm-hmm. And the Twins and I, we think, were close the first time they drafted me. But we just couldn't reach a number. And I really anticipated the year that Houston drafted me. I thought the Twins would go back in there and try to retain my rights. But Houston ended up making me the selection, and I didn't really have even a verbal agreement going with Houston, and I just didn't feel like the money was right at the time. I was 1 year removed from an injury, and I was really wrapped up in the idea of going to college at that point then, and doing a lot of the things my friends had done, because by then my non-baseball playing friends were enjoying their college time, and I thought, you know what?
Sure.
Well, I don't want to miss that, and I took a shot. My argument has always been to young players, if you're going to get so much money that you have no choice but to sign, do it. You know, when the money is that good, you can argue you can always go back to school. But the money for me at the time was not that kind of money. It wasn't life-changing money. Mm-hmm. So it made more sense at the time to go to school. Plus, I knew if I went to Clemson, a year into Clemson, I'd be eligible for the draft again. And it wasn't like I'd have to wait, you know, a couple, 3 years to get that opportunity again if I were healthy.
Okay, Okay. The Twins ended up drafting you again, this time in the 13th round, and you ended up signing with them at that time. Can you tell us about what happened there?
Well, for some reason, they kept going back to the well. Obviously, they didn't do their homework. It was one of those things where I was absolutely thrilled. By the time the Twins selected in 1988 my name, I was ready to go. Felt like I was, is it the right time to try it? And I was so excited. Plus, they had just come off the 87 World Series.
Yep.
And I couldn't be more excited. I mean, they were top of mind in the baseball world. Everyone was talking about them. I thought it was such a really great opportunity. I can remember pretty clearly, you know, the phone call is one thing, but the telegram that they used to send back in those days, that was the keepsake. I was like, holy smoke, I was drafted, and, you know, and this time I'm really, you know, probably going to make a deal happen. And it was just great. It was one of the highlights of my time on the planet, for sure.
Yeah. What kind of bonus did you get to sign, if we can ask?
Yeah, each question you ask, I don't think it was much. I don't even remember exactly. Maybe $10,000-$15,000.
Okay.
It wasn't much.
Okay.
At the time, I got to tell you, you know, the money had kind of always been between, I don't know, $10,000 to $45,000, $50,000. I think might have been an offer that Houston popped. I can't remember the details, but I can tell you, the money was never the kind of money the kids are getting today.
Sure.
So for me, it was great money for sure. I mean, I come from a single parent home and a blue collar family, and it certainly would have helped, but not so much where, you know, my mother was really big on education. So she said, you know what, that kind of money, if you finish your degree, you can earn that money back over your lifetime without batting an eyelash. So don't jump at that. So that's the decision we made.
Yeah, and that obviously paid off for you. You ended up playing in Elizabethan in the Appalachian League in 1988 after signing that first pro contact. Can you tell us a little about your first year of pro ball?
Shocking. It was absolutely shocking. And I played at Clemson, so that's in South Carolina. So I'm familiar at that time with the lifestyle and the culture through Tennessee and the South. But when I say shocking, it was Elizabethan had maybe one or two firms, and I believe Levi Strauss was one of the employers, and they were going out of business at the time. They were closing that plant, and guys my age, between 20 and 45, were sitting on the curb every day. It was really shocking to see that many guys and people out of work.
Wow.
And so that was my first experience into pretty tough economic times in the rural South. The baseball experience was fantastic. It was juxtaposed with this odd economic situation there. But the players were great. You know, we're all heaped in there, first-timers, guys from all over the globe. A lot of the players don't speak English. Most of us don't speak Spanish. So it's fun, and it's a great learning experience. My Spanish actually got much better after 1 year in the minor leagues than it was after taking it for 4 years in college.
I can believe that.
Being immersed in that. You know, culturally, it was fantastic. Baseball, it was just an extraordinary experience. Remember, coming from a Division I program, the facilities at the D1 level are really nice, especially compared to the rookie ball level. These are old fields, beaten up, not well maintained. You know, you're just trying to live on your own again for the first time with a new group of guys. It was extraordinary. I loved it. I can remember so many stories from them of just hanging out and learning about life. It was wonderful. I just really loved it.
And you played for Ray Smith, who I think is still managing there.
Isn't that something? You know, one of the interesting things I've always found about the Twins organization, even after coming back after all those years, is all the guys who I played for or with in 1988 and 89 are still with the organization. They just have what I call big boy jobs.
It's amazing.
You know, isn't it, though? Because with sports, as we both know, I mean, these guys typically change organizations. They get different opportunities. But look at the Twins. I mean, I played, Ron Gardner was a manager for us in instructional league in A-ball. And we all know where he is. Billy Smith was the assistant GM when I was down there, with Terry Ryan running the place. Jim Rance was there. I mean, there are very few changes up that way, so that's really cool. It's to come back at this stage in life and to see a lot of the guys I had worked with 20 years prior.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. in Elizabethan, do the players really live with the local families there?
Yeah, we did. We weren't making any money at all, and it was deals where we would rent rooms and sometimes a couple of us per house, depending on the size of the house. But you come in and you had that option. Not everybody did. A couple of guys, like I remember our first rounder lived with, in that summer, he lived with his father and brother and another friend in an apartment, and we thought they were high on the hog. You know, the rest of us, yeah, we'd pair up, and these families were just incredible. You know, they'd make you meals, and they'd help you with your laundry, and it was, I don't know that I would extend the same courtesy.
Pretty nice.
But I got to tell you, I sure appreciated it at the time. It was great.
The next year, in 1989, you ended up moving up to Kenosha, and you played for Steve Little, who's now the Twins' third base coach. You had a pretty nice season there with a 4-5 record and an ERA under 3 and 81 innings. What do you remember about that season?
I remember that was the season where I finally felt like I started to have a handle and knew what I was doing, and I was getting extraordinary coaching. At the time, Steve and our pitching coach and the roving instructors, I think, started to identify a few things about me as a player that they could really work on and that I could work on. And they were speaking the same language that I was understanding, which, you know how that goes. I don't care if you're playing golf or whatever your sport. Sometimes guys have to explain the same thing five different ways before they say the one thing that resonates with you.
Mm-hmm.
And they were figuring me out, and I was figuring me out, and I think that was why, statistically, I started to improve, and I just started to get it. I started to have an idea what I wanted to do on the mound. I started to be able to execute that. I knew I wanted to throw an inside fastball. I think a year prior, I couldn't do it. That year, I started to be able to do what I wanted to do and what the coaches wanted me to do, and from a developmental standpoint, it was the best year of my career, and it really is the one lament I have is you can't control injuries, but I sure wish I could have stayed with the organization another year or two. I thought we were on to something, and when I left, the problems became when I had a mechanical breakdown. No one in Pittsburgh my next year had ever seen me pitch before, so they didn't know how to fix me, whereas with Minnesota, you know, one or two bad outings, and the guys would say, hey, you're not doing this or that, because they had a frame of reference.
Sure.
So, 89, I should say, in Kenosha was my best year, and the year that sticks out to me is the year that could have, would have, should have, perhaps, maybe led to other things.
And unfortunately, like you said, the only thing that it led to at that point was that you were traded to the Pirates, but you were traded for catcher Junior Ortiz and pitcher Orlando Lind. And, you know, that's kind of unusual to be traded, I would think, for two players. You know, you're a minor leaguer just getting going. What did you think of the trade?
Well, the trade itself on the face as you describe it was thrilling. I was thinking, my gosh, I'm just an A-ball. What are they doing getting a big leaguer? And I think at the time, Orlando Lind might have been a double or triple A pitcher in return. But by the time I finished my season in Kenosha, Don Leppert and Jim Rantz and Terry Ryan had made it clear to me that they thought I was a prospect, and that we were on the cusp of something. I don't think I was ever in the same breath as, you know, a guaranteed major leaguer, a bona fide superstar on the rise. But I think I had a shot. I was left-handed. I was breathing, you know, as they say. I was throwing the ball around the plate, and I think we had a shot. And I think they might have convinced a few folks that, you know, I wasn't the worst pitcher ever coming up the farm. And for some reason, you know, Pittsburgh felt like it was a trade they could make. That whole thing, by the way, was extraordinary because, if you remember, that was the year Tim Lawton retired in spring training.
Yeah.
And the Twins were going to have to go to, basically, having to prepare to go to opening day without a frontline catcher. So they were in a pinch, and they had to make a move. And the move they chose to make was to bring in Junior Ortiz, and that's how I ended up in Pittsburgh. At the time, I was actually being shipped out to Visalia in California from Florida, and I was traded before the days of cell phones and emails, and we got to California and drove to Visalia, and I didn't have my name above a locker. And I'm looking through the clubhouse, and everybody's got a name above a locker, and I'm about ready to turn around and walk into the manager's office when he preempts that and taps me on the shoulder and says, hey, Mike, you got to get back on the bus. You've been traded to Pittsburgh. Literally walking around with my suitcases in my hands. And so back on the plane I went. I got sent to Big League Spring. because that's what Pittsburgh had still left, and I went back to Florida and was playing under Jim Leland and had an actual shot to make the club. I almost went from A-ball to the big leagues in 1990 with Pittsburgh. Bob Patterson was a left-handed reliever the Pittsburgh Pirates had. He was injured coming out, and they had no left-hander in the bullpen. And Jim had put me in a couple of big league spring games and was actually giving me a look. And Bob Patterson, on the last day of spring training, was healthy enough to break north. And I was optioned down.
So close.
That was close, man. That was as close as I thought I'd be. And I ended up having a first half that earned me a spot on the minor league all-star team. And I think from that point, the wear and tear and the injury started to mount, and I just was not able to be the pitcher that I ever was. And, yeah. You know, the rest is on the back of a baseball card now.
That's a shame. And in 1990, while you were playing in Salem, you played with a 23-year-old pitcher by the name of Tim Wakefield. Throwing a knuckleball back then, too?
Yep. It was his first year as a pitcher. He was a converted infielder, and he could always throw this goofy knuckleball, and no one would play catch with him because he'd throw it. He was just a character. He would throw it to you, and he wouldn't tell you he was throwing it. And it's like catching a butterfly, and these guys at that level throw that thing pretty hard. It gets to you quicker than it appears on TV.
Uh-huh.
And it would just dart and dance and bounce off your forearm and your chest. And we were so bitter with him, but playfully, you know, everybody got along with him. In fact, I roomed with him for half the season. But Wakefield that year went from A ball all the way up the ladder, and I mean, I think he had like an 8-1 September or August and September, the year that the Pittsburgh had a great team that year with Barry Bonds and, and that whole group, and they went to the playoffs, and Tim was a part of that.
Wow.
And Hadley, I mean, he's playing, and I've been wearing makeup for 20 years.
Yeah. You didn't play in 1991. Tell us about that.
At the end of the 90 season, I was traded to the Cubs and went to spring training, and something just wasn't right. I figured the wear and tear, my back half of the season of 90 with Pittsburgh's organization became kind of a series of sorenesses and pains in the shoulder. I was a reliever at the time, and I just wasn't recovering as well as I had the year prior, and I knew something was bugging me, but my appearances were up, and I thought maybe it's just I'm not used to the workload, but it started to become problematic, and to the point where I'm left-handed, obviously. I couldn't take my wallet out of my back pocket. I couldn't comb my hair. I couldn't hold a cup of water without it shaking out of the sides of the glass.
Wow.
Yeah, and so I knew something was wrong. We were, you know, being treated for it throughout that period, but nothing to the point where anybody said, yeah, you definitely need to get that thing looked at by a surgeon. But when I got traded to Chicago, in spring training, I just could not get it going. My velocity was way down. I was a guy who threw probably, back in those days, maybe 88, 91. Never, you know, not going to overpower you, but I had enough on the ball to get a few folks out. And I was in spring training throwing maybe 82, 83, 84, and I was hurting while I was doing it. They ended up sending me to Chicago from Arizona where we spring trained for an evaluation. And I thought I was just going to fly in and out. Next thing I know, they said, go to the store and buy yourself some fresh clothes because you'll be here about 3 or 4 days. We'd like to go in there.
Wow.
And that's what they did. And I think they took out some pieces of my shoulder and my fastball, too, because I never was the same after that. In fact, I was evaluated by, you've heard of Frank Job and yep. Dr. Yoakum out there in California. I went for an evaluation afterwards and said, hey, guys, why aren't I responding to this surgery? And they said, you know what, there are just a few quirks in that kind of procedure, and it just isn't going to work in your favor, and there you go. And I just, you know, not being not a player that teams had $1 billion invested in,
yep.
it wasn't going to happen after that.
Well, in 92, you were part of the Orioles organization, and you pitched 2-plus innings in 5 games, and then you basically walked away from baseball, it seems like.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I spent that year after the surgery trying to rehab. I was released from Chicago. I go looking for work, basically, the next season, and come in as a one-out lefty, and just I just am not the guy I had hoped to be, and I don't think the organization was needing to waste their time. At that point, you know, competitive anymore, and you're not who you remember yourself being, and you're not having fun, and you're not getting people out, that takes the joy out of the game for you, and you have to make a decision. And it, for me at that point, after enduring a year of rehab and seeing that I just was not the same guy, I'm kind of a fisher cut bait kind of guy, and I just thought, I can't see this thing coming around, nor do I have the patience or the wherewithal to stick it out, and I better pick up another line of work.
Today you're a news anchor at Care 11. I think you've been there since about 2006. Tell us a little about the path you took to get here.
That's been, to me, my second favorite journey of life. Beyond baseball, the chance to, you know, get that front row seat to some historic events and to be a news reporter, something really that is second only to my shot at baseball. So for me, it was about going back to school. I went to Arizona State to finish my degree because I was already an in-state student because of my time with the Cubs. Finished at Arizona State, took a reporting job in Colorado Springs, spent a year there, went to Knoxville, Tennessee for 3 years, for just about 3 years, went to Chicago for 3 years, New York for almost 6 years before the chance to work in Minneapolis. And for me, it was as much about quality of life and the fact that my wife is from Bloomington and raised my children near family as it was anything else. The, you know, the job is contract work, and it's 2 years here, 3 years here. My career is pretty much represented most in my field. And, you know, we had some amazing journalistic opportunities in New York, in Chicago, and throughout my career. And for us, it was a matter of putting all those parts together and saying, okay, where can we contribute to a community? Where can we do some of our best work and at the same time have a quality of life and raise our family the way we want to? And we're very fortunate to get the chance to work in Minneapolis, St. Paul.
And you're certainly a popular anchor, and you know I end up watching you every day at 5 and 6. So.
Oh, thanks. Appreciate that. It's always interesting to see what people's viewing habits are. As we, you know, we're trying to shape what we're doing to cater to you know, a certain audience based on who we think is out there watching at a certain day part. So thanks a bunch for checking us out, especially on the earlys. It gives me an indication I better be, as always, on my best behavior.
You also do some part-time work for Fox Sports North now.
Yep.
Is that something that you really enjoy doing?
Love doing it. It's my way of being able to do the things that I love to do under one roof, really. I love broadcasting. It's a great opportunity for me to be around baseball and the other sports. And the guys at Fox are just fantastic. I think they do a great job bringing the program to viewers in a way that has a very high level of what I call give a darn, meaning they're very quick to address mistakes. They're very quick to try innovative things that they think might enhance the viewer's experience. And it's exciting being a part of it. It's great to be out of the park. Even in the wintertime, they've incorporated me into the Timberwolves and Gopher and Wild coverage.
Okay.
So it's been a year-round thing for me now, and I love it. We just love it. It's just a great chance to stretch your wings and do some things with a smile on, which you can't always do when you're reporting the news.
Yeah. And we I certainly enjoy watching you there. I know you love to barbecue, and this past April you came out with your own brand of barbecue sauce called Fielder's Choice All-Purpose Barbecue Sauce, and a large portion of the proceeds, I believe, go to charity. Can you tell us about that barbecue sauce, Mike, and where we can find it?
Sure. In fact, we're working out a few deals now to get into some more supermarkets here in the metro. Right now it's available at all Target Field Pro shops at the stadium, as well as the sites in Apple Valley, or in Roseville, I should say, and Apple Valley and Minnetonka. You can also get it at all Bachman's Garden Centers and about 20 different retailers on our website, groundthegrill.com. But the genesis of this sauce is, this is a hobby I picked up when I went to Clemson, as I mentioned, in the South, and I played ball in the South, and then I got the opportunity to work as a reporter in Knoxville, Tennessee in the early mid-90s, and that's where I really picked up that love of barbecue. And like all people who barbecue, you try to develop something that's unique, mm-hmm. something that you can call your own, because there's so many great recipes and products out there. And you just want to try it. You want to try your hand at it. And that's really what it was. It was just a hobby that we started to develop. I made a bunch of mistakes. My family told me, this is okay. This stinks. Add this. Take out that. Uh-huh. And over years of doing this, with my own smoker and grill and having parties and folks over to entertain, I got a product that folks said, hey, you know what? That's pretty darn good. And I said, thanks. You know, pretty much was content to leave it at that. years ago, a couple of folks in the family said, you ever consider selling this stuff? And I said, you know what, gosh, geez, I've got, you know, pretty active with work, and it's kind of tough to figure out how to do this. But over the, I'd say, next year or two, I gave it more thought, and some friends of mine over at the Twins had come over to my house for barbecue. And they said to me, Mike, this is pretty good stuff. You ought to take a look at bringing this to market. Well, I heard it enough where I thought, geez, all right, I'll look into it. And the next thing I know, you know, Dave St. Peter tried it, Matt Hoy had tried it, Patrick Klinger had tried it, and folks started to get behind it. And I said, you know what, I've probably spent money on sillier projects.
Yeah.
So we tried to do that, tied it into a couple of great charities, and if you're going to ask me about the charity event, I'll just tell you right off the bat, what we're excited about is the two charities we've selected, certainly Boys and Girls Club and the Minneapolis Heart Institute Foundation, but the third charity will be selected by the fans of our Sauce Fielder's Choice. They go on our website and they submit who they'd like to see a portion of the proceeds go to at year's end. And in December, we'll pare that list down to the top three or four, and folks will vote through the month of December, and the winner will then receive a check on behalf of the fans and Fielder's Choice.
Well, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, it's kind of a neat opportunity for us to say, hey, we have a few charities who are special to us. We're sure you do as well, and we'd like to help who you'd like to help.
That's great. One final question for you, Mike. What do you enjoy doing in your spare time?
I don't have any more spare time.
I can believe that.
You know, three jobs has been quite a bit, and I'm lucky to have them, that's for sure. I mean, these are tough economic times for everybody. I think with my spare time, you'll find me trying to hit a golf ball straight, trying to catch a fish out of a lake, and usually being unsuccessful at both. But I spend a lot of time with my family. I've got two little girls and a wife I adore, and I spend as much time just being around them as I can.
Well, that's great, Mike. We thank you very much and appreciate the time that you spent with us today.
Well, listen, I appreciate you having me on. Thanks so much. I'll see you at the ballpark, I hope.
Okay.